from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. A brother-sister relationship changed and deepened by a mother's abandonment forms the basis of award-winning novelist Ann Patchett's newest novel, Dutch House. At 10, we'll talk to the author about her multi-generational novel, and then at 10:30, New York Times columnist Timothy Egan will join us in studio. His new book is called A Pilgrimage to Eternity. It chronicles his thousand-mile journey from Canterbury to Rome as he explores and reflects on secularism, Catholicism, and faith. We'll talk to him about his quest and what he discovered. That's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. As Ann Patchett began plotting her newest novel, The Dutch House, she told herself that she wanted, quote, to write a book about the kind of stepmother I don't want to be, end of quote. And the resulting work follows a family fractured by a mother's decision to abandon her young children and an emotionally distant stepmother who takes their beloved childhood home from them. Ann Patchett is the author of many novels, including State of Wonder, Commonwealth, and the Penn Faulkner Award-winning Bel Canto, and she's also the co-owner of Parnassus Books, an independent bookstore in Nashville. And welcome back, Ann Patchett.
Glad to be here. Good to see you.
Always glad to have you here, and thank you, and congratulations on the newest novel, which I suppose begins with a kind of premise that many might feel strange. What would happen if somebody got rich enough to buy a mansion for his wife, and the wife hated the mansion?
Yeah.
I'm not giving away too much plot here, but that's one of the premises.
That's right up front. Yeah, and that really came actually from the last presidential election and this sort of crazed celebration of wealth, the Kardashians, and feeling like in this country suddenly it seemed there could be nothing better than to just be the richest person out there. And I thought, I want to write a book in which somebody gets everything and says, this is not who I am, this isn't what I stand for, and I'm going to walk away from it.
It's quite a story, though, because the real focus is not so much her walking away. I mean, these are Irish immigrants, and she sort of is in love with doing good deeds for the poor and all of that.
Right.
But it's really the children's story. And I was struck by the fact that you decided you've gone kind of in different directions here. I mean, you've got, first of all, a woman villain, which I think your first woman villain. But you've also got a story told from the perspective of the son, not the daughter.
Yeah. Well, to me, the book is really about Maeve, Danny's sister. And I think when you write from first person, which I haven't written a first person novel since 1994, so this was kind of a big trip back in time for me, you have to ask yourself, is this a person who would be willing to tell a story? Maeve is not going to tell a story about herself, but Danny would tell the story, and it was more interesting to me to look at her than to look out of her eyes.
It's also a brother-sister story in so many ways, which we don't have a lot of. I remember when Kenneth Lonergan's film came out, You Can Count on Me. It was a drama before a film, and I'm fortunate enough to have a sister, and I mean, not everybody has a sister, not every brother has a sister they love, but I do, and those kinds of stories are sort of at a premium in many ways, brother-sisters. not so much brother-brother or sister-sister, but brother-sister stories.
Yeah, and I didn't think about this until the book was published. It's so interesting when the book comes out and people start saying, oh, you know, this book makes me think of Franny and Zoe. And then I think, oh, yeah, it actually makes me think of Franny and Zoe, too. I wasn't thinking about it at the time, but that is very much an influence. And I love the relationship between that brother and sister set.
Well, as a longtime American literature teacher, this book makes me think of a lot of American literature. It's my mind going intertextual all over the place, which it sometimes,
do tell,
alas, tends to do. Well, we can get into that. But really, what I was thinking of was also this story that you tell in many ways has a resonance of a fairy tale. And, I mean, not only brother-sister Hansel and Gretel, but it has Cinderella elements and so forth. And I was thinking about, I don't know if you know Bruno Bettelheim's book, The Uses of Enchantment, where
yes,
he writes about fairy tales. And he says, you know, like with Hansel and Gretel, take us into the woods, take us into all this unhappiness, and then restore things in some ways, or make things right. And this is also a story, not only a fairy tale, but a serious story about forgiveness.
It is. And let me just say something about the fairy tale thing, because it's come up a lot since I've been on book tour. So when I published my first novel, The Patron Saint of Liars, in 1992, Alice McDermott reviewed it for The Times. And she said in the review, "This book is a fairy tale, a delight." I think that quote has been printed on every single thing I have written since 1992. So there's a way in which I feel like, is it a fairy tale because there is a bad stepmother, or is it a fairy tale because Alice McDermott said that in 1992 and it follows me?
Well, it's certainly a testament of quite something to get a review, and particularly a laudatory review from the likes of Alice McDermott.
I know. I'm but still very appreciative.
You've gotten lots of laudatory reviews. I mean, you've had you can revel in that and certainly have it unto the next generations, as the Bible says, and all of that. But this is a story that really grabbed me in terms of the house. I mean, yeah. Not only do you make it so visual, you make us see that house, that Dutch house, as the title gives it, and think of other houses, House of Usher. And I mean, there are novels that are just built, Bleak House, just built around houses. But
Howard's End,
exactly.
There's a lot of Howard's End in here.
Yeah, there is. Well, I don't remember any bookshelves falling, but there's, tell us a little bit about the genesis of the house. I mean, you make it so visual. You make us see this house, sort of in the suburbs of Philadelphia, but did it come from an actual house?
No, it didn't. And it's funny because there aren't a lot of details about this house. There are maybe a dozen details. If you took all of the information about this house and put it on one page, you would have, you know, one page of details. My goal was to give very specific details, but not so much that the reader can't imagine their own house. I believe that every reader has the Dutch house in his or her life, some gorgeous house where they went to a party, or they used to drive by it when they were a kid and thought, that's the most beautiful house I've ever seen. So I'm hoping that when people read it, they'll plug in their own idea of a beautiful house. And as far as the details, I just kind of took them from different houses I've been in my life. You know, I was in a house once that had a blue and gold dining room ceiling. I was in a house once that had carved panels around the fireplace. And that's all it is.
But you paint quite a picture. And the other thing is, of course, this is a story about abandonment, and children lose their mother, and their reactions are so different, so dramatically
sure.
different. I mean,
sure.
not only because of their gender, but just as individuals.
Well, because the mother left when Danny was 3 and Maeve was 10. So Danny doesn't remember her at all. He has no memory of his mother. But Maeve loved the mother passionately. Maeve then becomes Danny's mother. And so Danny is mothered. Maeve is not mothered. So it's a completely different loss for the two of them.
And it's certainly something that haunts them in different ways. And this is where we get into the intertextual. There's kind of a Proustian element to your novel that is trying to recapture memory and trying to realize what memory actually is, as opposed to what we're living in the present and the flux of time.
You're making me sound so smart, and I really appreciate that.
You are smart.
No, but it's true. The house, you know, the house represents the past. It represents the moments in their childhood when they were happy. I think that we all have home attachments, but also the home is the outward signifier of one's success. So they were rich people, they were successful people, and everyone knew it because they drove by this beautiful house. Danny says everybody knew what went on in the Dutch house. Everybody was interested in their business. And so losing the house also signifies the loss of status, the loss of security, and the loss of love and family.
In the last segment, we were talking about the Loma Prieta earthquake, and I was talking with Stephen Talbot, who's part of the Talbot family, who are very prominent here in San Francisco. And the younger generation, Talbot, just did a film called The Last Black Man in San Francisco. He did it with a number of other people, but it's about the attachment to a house.
Yes, a great film.
You saw it.
Yeah.
There could be a film of this novel.
Really? It takes place over such a long period of time. I'm not sure there could be.
Well, and it's nonlinear, but I could see someone with some script talents turning it into a script.
Well, we'll wait and see. I'll see if the phone rings.
We're talking to Ann Padgett. Speaking about the phone ringing, if you'd like to join us, how's that for a segue?
That's beautiful.
You can do it now. We do invite your participation in the program. I know many Ann Padgett fans here, and you may want to talk to her about, this is her eighth novel, but you may want to talk to her about previous novels or about Dutch House, especially if you've read it. One of our producers' mothers read it and loved it, and that often is a response to her work. You can give us a call now, and we do welcome your calls. The number to join us at is 866-733-6786. Again, I'll repeat the number, 866-733-6786. And you can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you have for Ann Padgett to forum@kqed.org. Still with Parnassus Books, still doing the good work there in terms of really promoting the book industry?
Absolutely. And it's just nothing but a joy for me. I don't actually work at the bookstore. I am the co-owner, but I don't get behind the cash register. So I kind of get to swan in and out, you know, as I please. But the bookstore is a complete joy. And in fact, one of the sad things about being on book tour, there are so many great writers who are coming this fall who I'm missing and, you know, leaving them little notes.
A little bit of a lament there, I think.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And, you know, I believe she's a friend of yours, too. Our mutual friend Louise Erdrich runs a bookstore up in North Dakota and certainly has a lot of traffic there and a lot of fans of hers. If fans of yours come in the book to meet you and see you, and
they do.
If you're not there, then that's kind of an absence.
But it's amazing. It seems like every time I'm on the floor, there are a group of people that say, we came from Cleveland, or we came from Stockholm, or people come from all over to see the bookstore or to meet me. And I always say, did you really think I was going to be here?
Well, I just used the word absence, and it tripped off something in my mind that really I'm not trying to make you seem smart again here, but I think there's a line in James Joyce about the presence of absence. He's talking about the loss of his mother and Stephen Dedalus. That is at the heart, I think. And our next guest, Tim Egan, who's going to be joining us in the bottom heart of this hour, also writes about the loss of his mother. I mean, both of you have written very poignantly about the loss of mother, one through abandonment, one through death. And it's deep and it's profound. I mean, Freud said the worst loss that a father can have, or a son can have, is the loss of his father. But I don't like to go into those kind of universals. I think it's just very painful to lose a parent, especially if you're loved by them.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that what this book is about holding on to your loss. So
that's what I mean by the absence of the presence of absence. Yeah.
But the fact is that Danny and Maeve, each in their own way, grow up to be happy adults, you know, and to have good lives. But their loss is something that chains them to the past, and they just keep gnawing on it. They keep going back to the house. They keep parking in front of it and talking about what was taken from them. And it is the loss of parents and love and stability, but it's also the physical loss of the house.
I wonder if you could say something about why you completely abandoned the first draft of this novel and why.
Because it was so bad. I made an incredible error in judgment early on in the book, and I don't want to get into it too much because if I tell you what I did wrong, it kind of gives away then what I wound up doing right. But let it suffice to say that in the first draft of this book, 150 pages took place in Calcutta. Okay? And no one goes to Calcutta in this draft of the book.
So it was Alna's book, in other words.
Yes.
And then
yes.
It became...
Yes.
Nice book.
Yeah. Yes.
Again, we're talking to Ann Padgett, award-winning author. Her new book is The Dutch House. Her many past books include State of Wonder, Commonwealth, and Bel Canto. And Caroline, one of our listeners, writes, what practical advice do you have for fiction writers who are just starting out? You get that question, I'm sure, frequently.
I get that question so frequently that I did something really smart, which is I wrote a 50-page essay called The Getaway Car, which is in my book of essays, This is the Story of a Happy Marriage. And I basically answered every single question that anyone could possibly ask me about fiction writing, discipline, publishing, agents, revision, everything I know I put in one place. So I would say if you want a huge amount of information and a long answer to that question, get This is the Story of a Happy Marriage and read The Getaway Car. Just go to the library and read it. For a short answer, the best thing you can do is engage in volume. Read every single thing you can read. Read critically, read like a writer, and write a huge amount. And it's important to revise, but it's also just important to write things and throw them away and learn from the act of writing. It's been interesting on book tour. People will say, when I'm answering questions at the end, how do you do, you know, how do you make your characters do this? How do you do this? How do you do this? And I always say, I'm a professional. You know, this is what I do. And it's just having done it for a long time and stacking up the pages. And that's really the answer.
That's a sage answer. You're also still helping bookstore employees who suffer financial hardships?
I am. Thank you. I'm the ambassador to BINC, which is the Book Industry Charitable Foundation. And we give emergency loans to brick-and-mortar booksellers in need. And if you go online and look up BINC Foundation, it used to be part of Borders. And when Borders went under, the Borders people, some of the Borders people got together and made it a foundation that helps all booksellers. It's wonderful.
You know what I see? I see the halo over your head, the hagiography
yeah.
here.
It's blinding, isn't it?
Let me get some caller support here. We'll begin with Linda. Linda, join us. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. Congratulations to Ann Patchett. I could not believe it when I turned on the radio this morning and heard the word house. Because just yesterday I learned that the house that I grew up in, which, by the way, is in Ann Arbor, where Borders Bookstore began, I found out yesterday that its new owners are, quote-unquote, going to renovate it, and I just felt kind of heartsick thinking of all the effort that my father put into lovingly tending that house and trying to make it perfect for whoever bought it, and so just feeling kind of, just kind of sad about my childhood house today.
Well, you've called the right place. I am really sorry about your house. I was in Ann Arbor two nights ago. It's such a beautiful town. But I think that it is this kind of lesson, what life wants to teach us over and over again is how to let go of things, how to love them, and enjoy them and then move on from them, because life is just one endless series of loss. Boy, is that a downer or what?
No, it's a truth. It's an axiomatic truth, I would say. And yeah. I thank you, Linda, for her call, and we'll go to another call here. By the way, Ann Patchett will be speaking at Book Passage in the San Francisco Ferry Building at 12:30 today and at Danville Congregational Church tonight at 7 p.m. And here is Mary Beth. Mary Beth, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. I just finished the book yesterday on Audible.
Oh.
And I was so sad when it ended. I was so sad. I was just so sad that I didn't have more story. And I could have listened to Tom Hanks for another week.
Yeah, I was just going to say Tom Hanks, no less.
Yeah.
Yes. How did you get him to narrate? And he was so wonderful.
It's amazing. I'm so glad you called and brought that up because, yeah, the book is good, but the audiobook is spectacular. And I read Tom Hanks's collection of short stories called Uncommon Type when it came out. Before it came out, I really loved it. It's a terrific, terrific book of short stories. I blurbed it. I was then asked to interview him in Washington, D.C. when the book came out, and he was
The old quid pro quo.
Exactly. And he was interested in opening a bookstore in Los Angeles. So we stayed in touch. His wife, Rita Wilson, sings country music and writes country music. So they're in Nashville from time to time. So, you know, next thing you know, I know Tom Hanks. So I asked him on a complete lark, hey, would you be interested in recording my audiobook? Never thinking he would say yes. And he said yes. And I was floored. But it is...
He's a generous-spirited guy. Everybody who has worked with him and known him says that because, you know, someone of that kind of stellar stature to do something like this, even for someone who did something for him, is a big deal.
And also to say, hey, would you give me 4 days of your life?
Yeah.
Like, do you have an extra 4 days off when you could record my audiobook? But it is really so humbling is the only word to think, okay, I wrote this book. It's the best book I could write. This is all I've got for talent and intelligence. But then Tom Hanks takes all of his talent and intelligence and puts it on top of this book that I've written. And it really makes it something quite spectacular.
And think of the fees that he gets, the amount of fees that he gets.
Yeah, I don't think he was doing this for the money.
Obviously not. Let me get Ron on next. Ron, join us. You're on.
Yeah, hi. I am looking forward to reading The Dutch House. I've read nothing but good things about it. And I wanted to tell you how much I adored Bel Canto.
Thank you.
It's one of my, it's on the shelf forever, and I go back to it occasionally. And ironically, it was published, and I read it at the same time, that another similar themed book came out. It's called Chaste Goddess by John Schauer.
Wow.
And again, operatic in background, I'm a big opera fan. But I am so looking forward to reading Dutch House, and I just wanted to thank you for Bel Canto.
Can I recommend a book to you?
Sure.
James McCourt. It's a book called Mardu Gorgeous. And let me just tell you, it's Polish, and it's Mardu Gorgeous is spelled with many Z's and V's, and when you look at it, you can't figure out what it's saying. But it is also one of the great opera novels of all times. Right. James McCourt.
Yeah, McCourt was on many years ago when he first, I think it was his first novel. Haven't heard from him for a while, so I'm glad he's got something out there.
I haven't either. No, this is a really old book. So.
Sorry. Yeah. I thought it was something newer. Thank you for the recommendation, Ann Patchett, and thank you for the call, Ron. And let's try to get one more caller on. Diane, that's you. Good morning. Diane, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now I can. Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you. So I've noticed in a lot of the books, State of Wonder, Magician's Assistant, Patron Saint, there's an inaccessible female character.
Hmm.
And also in the latest. Usually it's an older woman. And the primary character is always trying to sort of get at that woman.
Yeah, what happened in my childhood?
We got a couch out there if you want to talk about it. It's okay.
She's a writer.
Yeah. I mean, do you notice some of the themes that people bring to your attention, or do they go beyond your radar, so to speak?
It's both. I certainly there are things that I do over and over again, and I think, oh, this time I'm not. This time it's all different. And then I get a little distance on the book, and I think, oh, look, there it is again. But what's comforting to me is it's true for everyone. And now that I own a bookstore and I'm reading nothing but contemporary fiction, I see other people's patterns, mm-hmm. and I feel like I'm in good company.
Well, let me thank Diane for the call, and thank you, Ann Patchett. Always a pleasure to have you, and congratulations again on Dutch House. And fare thee well.
Thank you so much. Good to see you.
Ann Patchett will be speaking at Book Passage in San Francisco Ferry Building at 12:30 today, and at Danville Congregational Church tonight at 7 p.m. And when we return, we'll be talking to New York Times columnist Timothy Egan. That's up ahead. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.